I'm not sure we can do anything about it because it probably, the IRS will make the determination on this, but is there any way we can structure this? For example, if you transfer any amount of money from your campaign account to your office account,
IRS,
that's taxable income. Under present, I think presently, it's supposed to be reported as taxable income. I don't know whether people do it or not, but it's supposed to be reported as taxable income. Is there any way we can structure this in your mind, thinking about, I would like you to think about this, so that if we allow a transfer of $2,500 from a surplus campaign account to an office account, I mean, if you transfer $2,500 and lose 38% of it to the federal government, I'm not sure what you're gaining, although you can, I mean, I know on a tax return then you can deduct the expenses against that, but that's a deduction, not a credit, so you're still paying taxes. I guess I'm just asking you to think, is there any way we can, I shouldn't say this.
Not off the top of my head, and as this was drafted, I did not spend a lot of time worrying about the IRS implications of it. I went down and talked to Carla Schofield in the Administrative Services Division, who handles the $6,000
right.
accounts,
yep.
just to get a sense of what was at play here, and she provided me some information. I did not spend a lot of time with it because I did not worry. I had a sense from the committee that they wanted to do things beyond the constraints
right.
of the $6,000 with this money.
Yeah, no,
still related to legislative.
Yeah,
so
and I'm just bringing it up as a thought. I don't know if there's any, I doubt there's anything you can do, but maybe if you could think about that, and maybe structuring it somehow language-wise, which would avoid a problem. But maybe there's not.
I'm on paragraph 23 of page 6 of my memo. The initiative bars out-of-state source contributions. There was a conversation around the table about, at least on the House side, about that being too harsh a rule, and so that exclusion has been removed, and limited contributions from non-residents are authorized. And I'm talking about page 7, line 8. $20,000 for people running for governor, lieutenant governor, $3,000 for those running for the state house. And the 3,000-2,000 ratio was generally based upon a discussion between senators and Senator Kelly and the representatives on the committee to try to develop a ratio, a working relationship there. Dollar figure is any deeper than that. Allows then some possibility for our out-of-state contributions up to those maximums.
Is there a definition, Jack, somewhere in here on what an out-of-state source is?
No, other than on page 7, line 10, from an individual, may not solicit or accept contributions from an individual who is not a resident of the state at the time the contribution is made, if the amount, and so forth and so on. We were trying to leave the door open a little bit for those who said, well, I've got a relative who lives outside that would want to contribute to my campaign, or I have a friend who has always supported me from out of state. So the door was left open to what they treated as a small way in order to allow some contributions to be received from out of state sources.
Okay. Include out of country, or is it illegal in a lot of country right now?
I don't know. I don't know whether.
Oh, your friends in Whitehorse don't want to contribute. To
they
you.
Don't anyway. So. They know better. But is there a federal law? I think there is a federal law, isn't there? Yeah, that's what I thought.
There may be a federal law, but federal law generally covers federal candidates, yeah. not the candidates that are addressed in this bill.
Well, the law, you're right.
Well, I remember a few years ago at Sheffield getting some money from the mine up by Fair on the Yukon. What's the name of that mine?
It
was $1,000 or something. He had to turn it back because of. Am I right on that, Brooke?
It is, Mr. Chairman, it is federal law, but it is also prohibited at the state level. Because
that's what I thought. Yeah, okay.
We'll proceed until 5:30, and then wherever we are there, we'll continue on to the next meeting, which will be Thursday, assuming we can set it up for that.
Paragraph 24. The initiative limitations of $50,000 contributions to political parties to candidates, $50,000 for the statewide candidates, governor, lieutenant governor, and $5,000 for the other candidates, has been raised per committee instruction, and we're talking about the item on page 6 at line 6.
Is this constitutional, Jack?
$100,000 for governor, lieutenant governor, $15,000 for state senate, $10,000 for state house, and $5,000 for the other races.
Well, if that's a requirement, it's an improvement over what I get from the party already.
Don't worry about it.
You gotta require that they do that.
Senator Phillips.
Is any limitations, is that, would that, I don't care what it's this or any other limitation, would that withstand a constitutional challenge?
I don't know. I think it would, but I can't guarantee it.
There are federal limits on what you can give to parties in federal rates.
Yeah, but I'm just talking about any limit, period. This one just brings up a point. It's a limit, but this one has to deal with parties. Of course, that doesn't, like Jim, you know, this is a nice requirement, but it doesn't really happen anyway.
But you never know.
Count on it.
Point 25. Under the current law, a group may not contribute more than $1,000. The initiative reduces that to $500. The committee recommends in the Senate CS that it be restored back to the $1,000 limitation.
So what is a group? How is that defined?
Group is essentially the definition provided, but group is essentially two or more individuals who get together in an attempt to influence an election. We're talking generally PACs.
Husband, wife?
I'm sorry?
Husband, wife? That's a group of two or more.
It's a group of two, I suppose, if they wanted to set themselves up that way and make contributions like that. I don't know of anything that would prevent it.
No, except that intent violate the law. That's one area that APOC regulated in with subsidiaries and various other things. You just have to,
The initiative, point 26, requires the group contributing to other groups. The bill lifts that limitation or that restriction, that prohibition, and allows a group to contribute to another group up to a maximum of $1,000. The initiative prevents the two statewide officers, governor and lieutenant governor, from soliciting and accepting campaign contributions while the legislature is in session. This bill eliminates that prohibition. The prohibition in place is a date limitation. The governor and lieutenant governor are limited to raising money to the period within the general election year, beginning on January 1st of that year. So those two officers or candidates for those two offices can raise campaign funds while the legislature is in session.
And they may, but not likely if they've got a campaign ahead of them, but they may then transfer that money raised during that six-month period to a legislative race?
As individuals, they are in a position to make contributions, yes.
You don't think that would happen?
Once again, probably would happen.
Pardon?
Yep.
Okay.
The initiative made changes in how AS 1513 may be enforced and essentially provided alternative tracks, one before the Alaska Public Offices Commission, one as a civil matter in front of Superior Court. The committee was of the opinion that the availability of the court remedy was on an equal basis with the administrative remedy was unnecessary and potentially damaging if it were misused. And so we've taken this and rewritten it in a way that tries to require the use of the APOC, the administrative agency remedy, first for a period of time, and only then at that point, if APOC is unable to provide early relief, the opportunity to move then into the Superior Court to exercise a enforcement remedy in the parking. Currently, there is an exemption for campaigns that, in which the candidate proposes not to receive or expend any more than $1,000. That candidate is not required to file the various items that have to be filed. The committee felt that the ceiling on that small campaign exemption should be raised to $2,500, and I have done that. The initiative, because it is an initiative, contains a severability provision. Statutes, as I think you know, do not necessarily have to carry their own severability provision in them, because there's a general severability provision up in the Title I. Kelly particularly was interested in having the severability provision put back into the bill, and I have done that. And because of the possibility that any bill produced by the legislature would not be found to be substantially the same as the initiative, and because of the possibility that then the initiative would continue to appear on the November general election ballot, and because of the possibility that both the law, the bill and the initiative might become law, I put a provision in here that says that one or the other, but not both, would become law. If the lieutenant governor finds that the two measures are substantially the same, then the initiative does not appear on the ballot and the bill becomes law. If the lieutenant governor says that the two are not substantially the same, the initiative appears on the ballot and the bill does not become law.
Unless the initiative doesn't pass?
Well, if the initiative passes, then it is the law and you come back in 1997 and pick up with it. If the initiative goes down, if it appears on the ballot and goes down in November, then the
There's
law
nothing.
Is as it is today.
Oh, really? Bad chance of that happening.
Are you finished?
Yes.
Now,
Phillips.
In your opinion, are there any sections here that could be considered unconstitutional?
I haven't looked at that closely. We have tried, based on the materials that were provided by Av Gross and Susan Burke
right.
here locally, and by Mike Frank from Anchorage, the initiative sponsor, the people on the committee, particularly Representative Finkelstein, working with the APOC, tried to at least address most of the concerns that had a constitutional dimension. And to tell you the truth, I have not gone back and satisfied myself that they have answered all of the questions that were raised either by Av and Susan or by Mike Frank or that I had happened upon. I will do that if you'd like.
Yeah, I have a question for David. And Mike Frank, does he realize that some of these could be possibly ruled unconstitutional if ever challenged?
Well, we'd be glad to submit to the committee if you'd like. And in fact, it's in a letter written to the bill's sponsor, Senator Kelly. There's a five or six page legal opinion from Mike Frank that responds to some of the arguments made by Grossenberg in theirs. There's also an analysis that Jack did previously of the original version of it all. The conclusion that Jack reached and Mike Frank reached is basically that, and actually Av Gross was all the same, that this goes into a bunch of gray areas and it can go either way. Av goes a little farther and then says what he thinks the conclusion will be, you know, that which ones will be found unconstitutional or not. But anything in the area of campaign finance reform includes provisions that will be subject to review. My own opinion, after reading all the materials and after reading lots of cases, is the provision that's most likely to be struck down in this version is the limited time period that June 1st to August time period for raising funds for a challenger is not enough time. The funny thing about it is the reality of the situation is it doesn't disadvantage the challenger, that most of the money raised prior to June 1st is raised by the incumbent. But the cases that have occurred in the past have indicated that the courts don't tend to like limiting time periods to such an extreme nature. I think you can get away with a year, but whether you can get away with what's essentially 5 months before a general, that isn't a provision of the initiative. It's a longer time period.
But the incumbent can't collect money during session. So you're only looking at 3 weeks for this year. You said the advantage was...
Well, I was just describing the status quo. Right now, prior to June 1st in any election year, 95% of the money raised in the previous years is raised by
I see what you said.
By incumbents.
Okay.
But the courts haven't found, based on that, the fact situation they've found has been one of challengers opportunities limited more than incumbents because of incumbents name recognition. So okay. It's hard to compress even though it may be good public policy, citizens want shorter campaigns, we may not be able to do it. And I'd say that's the weakest.
My voice, Mr. Chairman. Yeah. And I guess I've always heard that there was concern about the constitutionality of limiting contributions from someone outside your legislative. Does that still in here? Only in regard to lobbyists. But even that would be perhaps an unconstitutional provision.
Yeah, there are a couple Mike cited in his arguments because I have picked out that as a particular weak spot. Mike's response was certainly it's an issue, but there are states that have been upheld a ban on people with, I think, liquor licenses giving money.
Casino gambling, and
our Constitution says the legislature shall regulate lobbying so that for at least the state issues portion of it, we have a pretty strong case. But again, Mike in his memo never claims anywhere that absolutely any of these are going to be found constitutional. It's just the nature of the business, and it's important to remember the law we're operating under right now was an initiative. It was the legislature passed a bill that was found to be substantially the same. It went to court. Eventually, provisions were knocked out, including all the spending limits that were in it. And the law we have now is only the portion of the law that survived the constitutional challenge. Every state that's taken on these kind of efforts, there's always a challenge. There's always pieces that get confronted. It's definitely a gray area.
But you say there are other states that have prohibited businesses, i.e. partnerships, corporations, or whatever, from contributing to political candidates?
Well, that's the only one that I think there isn't an issue on. The federal government has banned corporations since 1910 or something, and unions since 1940, and half the states only allow individuals to give. That's actually more the rule than the exception. That's where the rise of PACs, partially came from. The PACs being groups of individuals giving. It's not a norm to allow those entities to give. Generally speaking, only individuals can give in politics.
Okay, I guess I would ask Jack one concern as we went through close to the end of your presentation, where it said the original SB 191 addressed ban on executive staff campaign participation during session, but the CS deletes that. Do you recall what the conversation was on why that was deleted? Let's face it, the governor is the most powerful political leader in this state, no matter who he is, and has a lot more people working for him than anyone else. What's the justification for allowing all executive staff freedom to participate in a campaign?
Representative Finkelstein can speak to the governor and lieutenant governor. And the instruction, as it came to me from the committee, was open it up to the governor and lieutenant governor. Well, the way this thing was drafted, the way the initiative was drafted and the way our original Senate Bill 191 was drafted, there I was left with what to do with the staff because we originally had tied the staff to the governor and lieutenant governor. And I just made a call that as the lieutenant and governor and lieutenant governor go, so go their staffs. If they are to be allowed, if the lieutenant governor and governor are to be allowed to raise money from January 1st on, then there's no sense in having an absolute prohibition against their subordinates engaging in that kind of activity in the period that had been closed to them. So I just moved them right along with the governor and lieutenant governor without asking the committee because I had to make a call. If you want to do something else with them, be my guest.
I just wonder what the logic was there since there's probably hundreds of staff members for the executive branch and making very important decisions during the course of the legislative session, more so when it comes right down to the final outcome of whether a bill lives or dies.
Mr. Chair, you may want to ban those people. We didn't discuss those. Jack made a reasonable interpretation. You may want to ban them. The only decision was about the governor and the lieutenant governor, and it only applies to one session. They're already banned in three out of their four sessions because they're not up for election that year. So it just comes down to the one session right before they're up for re-election, and it seemed unreasonable if their opponents out raising money for them to not be able to as well. Because the governor is the governor isn't tied directly to the session. A lot of the biggest decisions get made after the session with vetoes.
So a governor, lieutenant governor, that has reaching the end of the term limit requirement, 8 years maximum, could not be out soliciting funds for political purpose as of January 1 because they weren't eligible to file for re-election.
That's a good point. I never thought of that, but you're correct.
Okay, because I just say that because of the fact what not only this governor but possibly other governors have done. Solicited funds, which the majority ends up being channeled to legislative races, and it's raised during the time during a session. So obviously a big loophole. And not only that, but they're bragging about it so, in the press.
This doesn't solve that completely.
Yeah.
I mean, your point's a good one, but it doesn't solve it completely.
Okay, any other questions at this time? Thank you, Jack. I appreciate you walking us through this, and I'm sure we'll be back with you. We have some amendments that are floating around, and we'll bring them up at the next session. I'm going to try to schedule it, although we've got some pretty heavy stuff scheduled for Thursday. We'll try to schedule it for action Thursday, if time permits. With that, we're adjourned.